We're listening to Terry's 2006 interview with the Beastie Boys, Michael Diamond, Adam Horovitz, and Adam Yauch. Their new album is called Hot Sauce Committee Part 2.
You each come from families with pretty interesting artistic backgrounds. So if we could go around and if you could each talk a little bit about how, if at all, your parents' kind of artistic inclinations affected you when you were coming of age and developing your own artistic sensibility. Adam Horovitz, let's start with you. I mean, your father's a pretty well-known playwright, Israel Horovitz.
I grew up, my dad, every time I was with my dad, he was always, not always, but he wrote. He's a writer, so he was always in his office writing. He made a plan, like a point of, this is my work. I'm going to do this every day for these amount of hours. So I think that's where I got like a work sort of ethic. That's why we work so many hours we spend in the studio, and it just seems kind of natural because just watching my dad, how many hours he just spends in his office just writing and writing. Even when he doesn't have any particular story he's writing, you know what I mean? He'll just go in and just, these are the hours he's got to do it. So, you know, it was definitely influential to me just in terms of like a work ethic, just create whatever, you know, whatever you do, create something. And that was kind of the impression I got. And definitely from my mom was a very, very artistic person. And that's I got creativity from my mother.
Michael Diamond, your parents were in interior design. Do I have that right?
Well, my dad was actually involved with the art world. He was an art dealer.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know. For me, I'd just say my influences, I had two things. One was I was the biggest thing for me, I was the youngest of three brothers. Mm-hmm. So growing up here in Manhattan in New York City at the time that we grew up, like in the 70s and the 80s, it was such an influential time of so much music happening, so much, you know, just kind of like everywhere. And it's, you know, this is a time before the internet, you know, you really had to have local access to things and things. And it was just like you had hip hop, you had reggae, you had punk rock. I don't know what my entrance to all this kind of music would have been if I wasn't the youngest of three kids, because it was kind of like whatever my oldest brothers were going through, I wanted to do the same thing at the same time. So even though I was like 12 or 13, whatever they were doing when they were 16, I had to be involved with it.
So what were they listening to that you loved?
I mean, whatever, that transition. I mean, that went from like stealing my brother's, you know, Steve Miller, Fly Like an Eagle album to then like discovering Elvis Costello through him to then, you know, getting turned on to hip hop from my friends or stealing, you know, one of my brother's Bob Marley records. Yeah, I don't know. And then for my parents, I'm trying to think, I think like the biggest influence I got from my parents was just being exposed all the time to, like, they were really good about, especially since we grew up here in Manhattan, it wasn't like they would go to events and we'd stay at home. It's like all the time we'd be going to art type
galas?
Functions. We'd be going to gala. No, I don't know, gala events. I think the kids got left at home for gala events.
Right. I'd leave the kids at home for
gala. But, you know, if you're going to like an opening or, you know, all the time, there were like, you'd have like whatever creative people kind of coming in and out. And I think like I learned as much from the kind of creative people around the periphery of like my parents as I did from going to school in a lot of ways.
Adam Yauch, your father's an architect. Do I have that right?
Yeah, but he's actually more of a painter. He went to art school for painting for a long time, and then he switched over to architecture, and he did that for a while, and now he's gone back to painting. And I think he's...
Google him.
What influence has that had on you?
Well, you know, I went to college for a couple of years, and I remember, like, I was mostly signing up for, like, music classes and, like, art classes and all kinds of things. And I remember my mom kind of being like, what are you doing? Like, if you're going to go to school, you got to take some more academics. This is ridiculous. And my dad just kind of said to me, like, do whatever you want. If you want to take art classes, just take art classes.
Wow.
I wouldn't worry about it.
Did you ever expect that the Beastie Boys would be together for 25 years?
No. We didn't know. I mean, it's not like we had no idea it was going to be for 25 days.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, when we started the band, maybe I'm speaking for myself here. There was no like big ambition. It was kind of like, you know, that was a time when we were going to see bands all the time. A lot of our friends were in bands. So it just seemed like the natural thing, like, okay, let's start a band and have fun. You know,
play a couple of gigs or whatever.
You know, we were in high school. It wasn't like, okay, we're going to take over the world and do this for our whole lifetimes. I mean, I do think, I'd say about last 3 to 5 years, my mom has finally realized that I'm not going to get a day job. Yeah.
You know, I think if we knew that the band was going to be around for this long, we probably would have thought of a better name.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. How did you think of the name?
I had nothing to do with it. It just Adam Horvitz.
It just seemed like it was a funny idea at the time. It was literally like we thought we were probably just going to play a handful of gigs. You know, we all our friends were in bands. Everybody was in bands. You just like used to throw together a band and like write a couple songs, play a couple shows, and you're done, you know?
I mean, also part of the fun of being in a band was coming up with the stupidest name you could think of.
Like so, my band New Wave Old Hat. That's a big one.
Angry Samoans is a good name.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us. Thanks.
Well, thanks for having us.
Okay. Thank you.
The Beastie Boys recorded in 2006. Their new album, Hot Sauce Committee Part 2, was released earlier this week. The extended video for the first single, Make Some Noise, was directed by Adam Yauch. Also known as Fight for Your Right Revisited, the video features Will Ferrell, Jack Black, John C. Reilly, Seth Rogen, and others playing the Beastie Boys young and old. You can find a link to the video on our website, freshair.npr.org. I'm Dave Davies, and this is Fresh Air.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from LendingTree, providing multiple loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 800-555-TREE. From Chevrolet, undertaking a carbon-reducing effort, investing in projects like wind farms over the next few years at Chevy.com. And from Mount Santa Fe, with the film There Be Dragons, a story of love, forgiveness, and redemption from the director of The Killing Fields, in theaters today. This is NPR.
Coming up, we remember playwright, screenwriter, and director Arthur Lorentz, who died yesterday at the age of 93. Lorentz is best known for writing the book for two landmark Broadway musicals, Gypsy and West Side Story. Also, David Edelstein reviews the new Mel Gibson film, The Beaver. This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies in for Terry Gross. Mel Gibson's behavior has made him something of a pariah in Hollywood. But Jodie Foster, who co-starred with him in the 1994 film Maverick, cast him in the starring role of her new movie, The Beaver. Gibson plays a depressed man who talks to others only through a hand puppet. Foster plays his wife in addition to directing the film. David Edelstein has this review.
Every single person to whom I've mentioned The Beaver has announced that he or she has no intention of seeing another movie starring Mel Gibson, even if he's playing a nutjob like they think he is in life. But I couldn't wait. I think Gibson is a fascinating actor, and he was especially good playing crazy in the 1997 thriller Conspiracy Theory, a welcome change from the usual Make Mel Mad template, where he's driven to take vengeance on those who kill or kidnap his wife or lover or child or dog. In The Beaver, Gibson plays Walter Black, a near catatonically despondent business owner who finds a beaver puppet in a dumpster and begins to talk through it using a blunt Cockney accent. although Walter plainly manipulates the puppet and makes no ventriloquist-like attempt to conceal the movement of his own lips, the beaver claims to be alive and speaking on Walter's behalf. To engage Walter, you must literally talk to the hand. Walter even gives a letter of introduction to Meredith, his stricken wife, played by director Jodie Foster.
Hello? The person who handed you this card is under the care of a prescription puppet. Walter, what the hell is this?
Read the card.
Yes, I...
Read the card.
I...
Read the card.
The person who handed you this card is under the care of a prescription puppet designed to help create a psychological distance between himself and the negative aspects of his personality. Please treat him as you normally would, but address yourself to the puppet. Thank you.
There you go.
Is this some kind of a joke?
No, hardly, love. Nothing funny about it.
Stop it with the puppet. Right? I'm confused, Walter, and I need some answers right now.
Despite its bizarre trappings, Kyle Killen's script for The Beaver is rather tidy. It's a problem drama on the theme of defense mechanisms. Walter, through The Beaver, explains that instead of living in misery, he has wiped the slate clean and become someone else. In contrast, the movie presents his high school son, Porter, played by Anton Yelchin, who seeks to confront his own demons, most of them having to do with his father, and purge them in a way more conventionally psychotherapeutic. He's also made it his mission to force the girl he has a crush on, played by Jennifer Lawrence, to acknowledge the death of her older brother instead of repressing it. That doesn't prove to be the fastest way to a girl's heart, but neither, at the other extreme, is his father's planting a kiss on his wife's lips with a hand puppet. It's too bad that the beaver itself isn't much to look at, being an ordinary hand puppet with anatomically correct small eyes. Worse, what comes out of its mouth, or Walter's, isn't especially witty. You never see how Walter in the short term could be liberated by giving in to his aggressive and confident side, how he could actually have fun being madcap and filthy-minded. Gibson bites his lower lip as if chagrined and makes his face into a blank so that you register only his wounded blue eyes and sagging features. He abstracts himself. My guess is that Jodie Foster was so afraid of trivializing Walter's mental illness that she forgot she was an artist and not a social worker. Her pacing is so glum that the movie could have been directed by her character, Walter's troubled wife, a Meredith Black film. In the later scenes, Gibson begins to rebel against the beaver, which starts making like the demonic ventriloquist dummy in the old Anthony Hopkins thriller Magic. But even their grisly final confrontation doesn't liven the movie up much. I swear, the biggest laugh is when Walter makes the rounds of talk shows and ends up on Fresh Air opposite Terry Gross. I won't spoiler joke. I guess to hear it, you might have to be one of those people who goes to a Mel Gibson movie.
David Edelstein is film critic for New York Magazine.